You are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network, coming to you from the heart of the Q in Quitman, Mississippi.
Old Men Stories, a show just about old men? Not hardly. It's a name that conjures up the image of someone who's been through it all, seen it all, and survived it all, like the storytellers of old. That wisdom comes with age. But all age is relative. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be male. You just have to live the story and survive to tell the tale. Join Master Storytellers Roland Willits and Jeff Young now as we start today's journey.
Stopping at the byway, looking for the old man of our day. I'm looking for the stories back in their days of glory, just to see what those old men have to say. And I'm looking for the stories of our land. I'm looking for them everywhere I can. Old men's stories are the reason, and I'll listen any season. I'll search for these old men across the land. Yes, I'll search for these old men across the land.
Roland Willits.
And Jeff Young.
Old Men's Stories. Welcome to our show. During our 108th show, Doctors Occupy Our Time, the Magicians of Health. Our health is the first concern for all of us. After our health knowledge is depleted, in making ourselves healthy, doctors are our saviors. Doctors' stories are in everyone's life. Find an interesting one. Put color and vibrancy in as you march into your exciting old man story.
Good afternoon, everyone, from Fremont, California. And where are you this week, Roland?
Apache Junction, Arizona.
Apache Junction, Arizona. It's Old Man Stories. And we're talking about going to the doctor for a visit. Now, we recently had a show on hospital visits. What would you say is the biggest difference between a doctor visit and a hospital visit?
Well, I think you go to a doctor when they're just, you know, you have something that just they can handle. That's normally not life-threatening or something that a doctor usually sends you to a hospital, something major. Hospitals are like the last resort when something happens. How does that sound?
Yeah, I can say that because you visit the doctor, but you stay in the hospital. That's a good way to put it.
I guess
for me these days, my personal physician is part of the hospital system, as in he worked for Kaiser Permanente. So in a lot of ways, to me, the hospital and the doctor are this more or less the same. But I can definitely say that the case when I was younger was definitely not that. I don't think I've ever been to the hospital more than once as a patient in my long memory as a kid. But I had been to the doctor a number of times. And generally, being in a family of five with a younger brother and an older sister, if one person gets the cold, everyone gets the cold. And mom used to haul all three kids in. And looking back, I kind of wonder if we have some sort of three-for-one special with the doctor. Because if all of us got sick at the same time, man, you just got to pay three times, once for each kid. And when you're a kid, you don't even know how much something costs when you go to the doctor, only that you're sick and mom drags you to the doctor. And you get to go into the room and you sit on that uncomfortable pad on the examination table, and the doctor comes in and says, okay, take off your shirt, and you put the stethoscope against your chest, breathe, cough, open your mouth, stick this thing in your mouth, get poked there, How does this feel? Stick the thing in your ear, and then if you're lucky, you get candy. But I come from a family that has a good number of doctors in it. The running joke was, if you live on the East Coast, you either want to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a stockbroker to pay off one of those doctors or lawyers. Because that was then the key to being successful. You pretty much had to go to one of those specialized schools. But we have a number of doctors in our family, and no matter what your specialty was, whenever you went to our family gathering, somebody would say, this uncle's a doctor. If you're having problems, go talk to him. Now, to be fair, the uncle in question was also a pediatrician, so odds on he was pretty decent at diagnosing various things. So the anecdote to this is that I had a friend of mine who I went to high school with, and he was dead set on being a stockbroker. But then he decided he wanted to be a patent lawyer. And then he went to medical school, and he is a doctor now. So the story holds true. And he's apparently doing a really good job of being a kid's doctor, because he's always gotten along well with kids. Roland.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I remember growing up in Minneapolis, we had a family doctor forever. His name was Dr. Anderson. And Dr. Anderson was a big guy. He looked like he could have been on the line for the Vikings, you know, like a offensive guard. He had big hands. But Dr. Anderson, he went in and he started talking to you, and you were just comfortable. He knew he was going to take care of you. And he just died a few years ago, and we all got the information within a day that Dr. Anderson had died. That's how close we were. And we all had our stories of visiting Dr. Anderson. I remember Roland Willett, careful person that I am, was leaving the barber shop. And my ma was there. I was young enough that my ma took me to the barber shop. And I was talking away and not paying any attention, and I walked into the street and ran right into the side of a car that was running. At that time, the bumpers wasn't smooth like it is now. The bumpers stuck out, and I hit the rear bumper, and I got a big gash in my leg. Well, they called Dr. Anders. He said, I'll meet you at the hospital. And we went there, and I was sort of in a haze, but I remember they had a doctor that was starting to take care of me, and when he got there, I saw Dr. Anderson. I looked up at my big Dr. Anderson, and I knew I was safe. And he just took care of us, all the kids and mom and dad. Yep.
Now, for me, it was Dr. Newman and Dr. Bass. And mom, still, to this day, last month when I was visiting, said, oh yeah, Dad's new doctor is by Newman and Bass. Do you remember where that was? I said, Mom, that was years and years and years ago. I don't remember where that was, and you drove the entire time. And it's just essentially, you're not going to the doctor. You're seeing Newman and Bass. That's it. Dr. Newman and Dr. Bass. You couldn't get one, you got the other. So the thing about Dr. Bass that I remember is that it was designed to make people feel at ease in a room where everyone is sick or hurt or something, and generally there's somebody who's unhappy, but the room is always decorated like you would expect daycare to be. There are toys, there are books, there's cheery pictures on the walls, and the receptionist/nurse is a place where she can see the entire room. And I just remember, like, the background noise of the room was the receptionist going, Dr. Newman, Dr. Bass, hold please. Dr. Newman, Dr. Bass, hold please. And it was just comforting as a routine. And eventually they'd come out and then get one of us or all three of us, and then he'd drag us back to the room. And there were always these things just sitting out on the counter that you remember, like the jar of tongue depressors or the jar of cotton balls. And I remember being really fascinated by the whole tuberculosis test that they always did, where they would take this four-pronged device, just poke you in the arm with it, and then they'd give you a card to hit home with you. We said, okay, well, mail this card in if your arm in 3 days looks like this. If it looks like this, circle this one. If it looks like this, circle this one. And it was this 3D printed card with the various allergic reactions to the tuberculosis shot or the tuberculosis thing they poked your arm with. But of course, the thing that I will never, ever, ever be fond of is getting shots. Never in 100 years. I've gotten a lot better about getting them and taking them, but when you are a kid, to get jabbed in the arm and it hurts, you associate that with doctors, and even if you're going for a routine checkup, you never know when you're going to get the shot in the arm. And I have to wonder whether medical technology has gotten better since then, because when I got blood drawn a couple of months ago for our health checkup, it's no longer this take the lancet and poke you in the finger really hard until you bleed and then suck all the blood out of this straw thing, but rather this sort of boxy slingshot thing that they punch you with now, and it doesn't even really hurt. On the other hand, the tetanus booster that I got recently, yeah, that still kind of hurt. And they even gave you a little piece of paper to read and distract you while you're getting shot. It said, by the way, because you're being injected with dead tetanus virus bit antibodies, this may cause an allergic reaction, and you may feel like you've been punched in the arm. And I said, thanks. When's the shot? Oh, you've already had it. I said, oh, that's what that uncomfortable feeling was. Gotcha. Oh, by the way, we're now going to draw blood, too. So, it just goes without saying that when people view the doctor visit as unpleasant and something they don't want to do, you might as well be going to the vet for your pet. If your pet doesn't want to go to the vet, you can understand why. Roland.
I understand that. Yeah, you got to sort of hide it from the pet. I don't know, somewhere along the way, I sort of lost my fear of, you know, doctors, and I didn't get much, you know, unless I thought something was wrong. I mean, really wrong. I mean, not something like I got a gash or something that needed to be sewed up or something. I mean, something I didn't really know what it was. I told you the story about going to the doctor when I had the African jungle disease, didn't I?
I don't know. That sounds familiar.
I came back from Africa about 6 years ago, and I was over in Sudan and Uganda, right next to the Congo. And I got back here, and we were up northern Minnesota, and I started getting this stuff that grew on my side of my body. And I looked, I said, oh, no. And Terry says, oh, you must have got poison oak. So she treated it with poison oak stuff.
Uh-oh.
And it started getting worse. Oh, no. And then it started spreading. I says, I was just over in Africa. I've got some disease that we're not stopping. No, no. I was getting really frightened because I didn't have the slightest idea what it was. And so we went into the doctor's office, and we sat out there in the reception area. And I looked around, and all these kids were playing and having fun. And I said, looked at them, and I said, they get to live forever, and I've got a disease, and I might not even make it out of this office. Well, I'm dramatic, you know, a little dramatic here, but
mm-hmm.
I was frightened because it was getting really bad. And so Terry and I, she walked into me, the lady doctor came, and she says, take off your shirt. I took off my shirt, and I said, what is it, doctor? And I was really frightened. She said, sir, I'm really sorry. I said, oh, no. She says, you have shingles. I said, shingles? I was thrilled. It's curable. So sometimes what other people think are the worst are a life reprieve for other people. So that was one doctor's visit that bad news for both people was great news for me. Jeff?
Maybe it was mysterious African shingles. Just having roofing problems.
Yep, this rupee problem. You know what shingles is, right?
Yes. They have commercials for that on TV in late in the evening. Oh no. And it's like, it turned out I have shingles, and if you have had the chicken pox, you might get shingles. Please see your doctor immediately if you have this.
Right.
Yes, but a lot of the diseases that used to be prevalent in the 30s, 40s, and 50s are now preventable and curable. So our death rate has gone down. And I think maybe a part of it is that we have these doctors that are not hospital doctors that are supposed to make sure that you get immunized properly. And since I have had both parents working in the New York City school system, I know for a fact that no kid ever gets into the school unless they can show a full set of immunizations. Not just because they want you to be safe, but also because you don't give everyone else something ugly. Because one of the running jokes about having kids is that whatever is going around at school, you get it. And it comes, or your kid gets it and comes home and gives it to you. And the only difference between an adult and a kid is that for adults, it's convention crud. Because people come from all over the world to a convention, and they bring with them things from another place that you aren't immune to. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't get a booster shot or a preventative thing that keeps you from getting the known diseases. But sometimes I wonder if we over-medicate ourselves just because the doctor tells us to. And whenever flu season comes around, there's these whole screaming and yelling, get flu shots done, get flu shots done, or else it's better to have them done. And I see people who get their flu shots, and sometimes they still get sick with the flu. Meanwhile, I've been at least 13 or 14 years since I've had a flu shot, and I've never caught the flu. No matter how virulent the season is, just got one of those anti-flu metabolism things going for me, I think, that, I mean, I'm not going to chance it by standing next to someone who has the flu, but sometimes I think your own immune system is better than some of us give us credit for. I think that doctors don't get enough respect because everyone associates them with pain and high medical bills and more pain and shots and being sick. And no one wants to be sick, and no one wants to be around someone who's going to poke them and hit them with a needle every time you go to their office. But I know doctors, and they're generally fairly friendly people. And a friend of mine just came back last week from an interview, and I hope he gets the job. He wants to be a partner in a private practice after working in a hospital for so many years. And he said one of the differences between being a doctor in a hospital and having a private practice is that you get to choose who you get to see. And working in a hospital, you tend to have more of the schedule that they set for you. And I thought about it, and I said, you know what? Having a family doctor, it really is about that extended family feeling. Like I said earlier, mom doesn't call him the doctor, it's Newman and Bass. And she would talk with the doctors after the checkup was done and just kind of be friendly. Of course, mom does that to everyone. But your doctors are supposed to be on a reasonable first name basis with you. And the personal physician that I have tries to do that as well, but I think he sees so many people that he has to consult his notes every time I come by. But then again, I don't go by every year, maybe once every other year or so. So I can't blame him for that. Where I am on doctors is that when I have kids, if I have kids, I definitely want to know who my doctor is going to be. I don't want something that's going to be impersonal. Here, come in here, sit down, and some random person takes my temperature, weight, blood, and all the other stuff, and just poked in the arms. Okay, you're done. Pay us $25, get out. I want someone who has that continuity, who is going to get to know any kids that I have, and say, oh yeah, how are you feeling? How is the baseball going? Stuff like that. Who knows? Just a random opinion.
I like that opinion. I am in concurrence with this. Although, when we raised our boys, I don't remember the doctor they went to. They rarely went to the doctor. I like the idea, but in California, it seems to be different. I don't know why, than it did in Minnesota, about personal physicians and stuff like that. And knowing your neighbors, and different personality, brain. It's okay. I mean, we we survived it, but I don't remember any of Mark's, my son's death. Now, when Terry and I go to Paducah, Kentucky, to our daughters and our kids, our grandkids and our great grandkids, we know the doctors there, but our doctor is what they call a nurse practitioner. And a nurse practitioner does the same thing for most of the things that our doctors used to do. And they give prescriptions and they examine you and they can handle shots. They can give you the shot you need for adrenaline and stuff like that for colds. They can handle almost all the things our doctors used to have. And I think this is pretty cool to know them. We know the doctor, and it's really funny because the doctor that we use also goes to my daughter's church. And we go to Sunday school together. They have adult Sunday school. Pretty cool, huh, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
And so she takes really good care of us, and she asks about our health every time we stop in there, and we get here. She asks about our health after our catechism class. I call it catechism because that's an old Catholic, but they call it Sunday.
That's definitely the small town attitude. And if you have one doctor serving an entire community, yeah, you're going to get that. And maybe what we just need to recognize is that a doctor is a doctor, but each of them has their specialty. And I think having someone who knows you better than the average person off the street knows your medical history is probably a good thing. And sort of going on a side note, I've been seeing a chiropractor for a number of years, and a number of years back, he semi-retired and gave the job to, or the office to one of his students. So the transition was, okay, well, we're going to have the new doctor go ahead and give you your treatment and I'll watch. And then he left, and the new doctor became our chiropractor for a while. And then unfortunately this past year he said, well, the practice is being shut down and I don't know what I'll be doing, but I'm referring you to one of my favorite people who does my chiropractic work when I have a back problem, and you'll like her. And there was just this sense of having to learn to get to know a new doctor over again. And every doctor is different. Everyone has different personality. Everyone has different focus and a different way of doing things. I remember when I first got Dr. R from Dr. O, I said, he's really heavy-handed, and this is really unnerving about the treatment. But after a while, I kind of like it that way, and I am in a lot less pain because of the new doctor. And so when Dr. R said, I'm closing my practice down, you get to see Dr. G, and we said, no, wherever you go, set up practice, let us know where you are, we'll come see you. And he said, no, don't worry, give Dr. G a try. She comes completely recommended by me. I wouldn't give you to just anybody. So it's been a few months, and we'll see. But we're going to our break, so we'll be back with more Old Men Stories in just a moment.
You're listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. Roland and Jeff will be right back with more of Old Men Stories after this short break.
This is Terry Willits, Mom Software, giving stability, service, and excellence.
Thank you, Terry, for the leadership at Mom Software and the noble example you set for all. From our home here in Silicon Valley, and from where it all started, San Francisco, 35 years ago, we welcome you to Old Men Stories. We We hope you will continue listening to our radio presentation. We know you will hear a few wonderful stories that started from the home of Mom Software. www.momsoftware.com. One word, one S.
And we're back with more of Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. You're invited to join the circle and share your comments and questions in our always open chat room at http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. That's http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. Now, let's give a warm welcome to our hosts, Roland and Jeff, as we continue today's storytelling journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second half of Old Men's Stories, the book on doctor's visits. And as I understand, today's special guest is a doctor themselves. Roland, what can you tell me about them?
Well, I think we should go into the story and I'll listen and then see if we covered everything in the story, then I won't add anything. And if I can add some things, I will at the end. Take it away, Sharon.
I'm talking to my good friend, Dave Gorsolowski. It only took me 2 years to learn how to say Gorsolowski. But I'm quick. So,
you're a quick learner.
Yeah, I'm a quick learner, yes. You graduated from Stanford? Is that where you right?
From Louisiana State University, LSU.
LSU. Oh, cool. Why did you move to the Bay Area?
I was on faculty after training, after medical school, and missed direct patient care. So when a position came open in the San Francisco Bay Area, I thought, oh, here's a chance to get back to what I really love doing, which is direct patient care. And I broke away from faculty at the medical school, and here I am.
Oh, cool. I've seen you at 3 or 4 places. Do the VA, right?
That's correct, in San Francisco.
And how did you get that?
University of California, San Francisco, like most medical schools, has a standard hospital, a pediatric hospital, a county hospital, and typically a VA hospital. And the VA called me and said, we heard that you are setting up shop in the Bay Area, and we would like to offer you a position because you are a former faculty member of University of Michigan, where I did some postgraduate training. And they said, how about coming up and see what it's like to teach medical students from up here? And that was many years ago, and it seemed to click, so there I am.
Oh, okay. Oh, you know, Terry just gave me a little note, and she said, you got Best Doctor of the Year Award. Could you tell me a little about that?
I am I'm impressed that Terry does all this background research, and kudos to Terry for all the work she does. I was surprised myself because I practice primary practice outside of the medical school, and I teach part-time at the medical school. And they called me at one point a few years ago and said, would you please come to the end of the year graduation for the students, where we put on the cap and gowns and march down the aisle and things like that. And they said, come with your cap and gown. And I said, okay, I don't usually wear my cap and gown around the house very much. And so I showed up
all suited up, and we all marched down the aisle to graduate the new students, and they had me stand up unexpectedly and said that I was Teacher of the Year at the medical school in dermatology. So I was very honored that the students would recognize my teaching efforts and the fact that we're trying to produce good doctors. It's something that will stay with me forever.
That is wonderful. And you are a Bay Area person because you're traveling all over the Bay Area. Is it every week or is it as alternate? You're at Stanford today.
I also teach at Stanford, and yes, I'm on at Stanford Medical School part of the time as well. So I think I need a helicopter. Roland, do you have a spare I could borrow?
They need one that keeps you alive on your travels. So don't look at me.
Well, it is a challenge to do all these positions between my practice and teaching at the two medical schools. But like so often is the case, I get back much more than I give, and I'm very privileged to be able to be faculty at the medical schools, and I'm hoping that I'm offering something that will better the next generation. But at the same time, I get a lot more. I get a lot back in return.
Oh, I bet. I know what it is like teaching. It's just an awesome reward. For, you know, you feel inside when you see these kids finishing, and that's awesome. And what grades or what areas do you teach at these?
I teach at the bedside in dermatology. So if we're trying to teach these doctors how to practice in the same specialty, they will see patients with skin problems, skin conditions, and then talk with me outside the examination room, and then have me do the same examination with them and say, do I agree? Do I disagree? Do I offer any additional suggestions? And that way they learn from the person who's been in practice, may I say, their senior. And hopefully carry away something from my experience.
Well, if I know you, I learn when you know, I think I'm one of your students when you're treating me. You give me a full rundown on what it is and break it down into detail. And you're a teacher as well as a doctor with me. I think that is so cool.
Very kind of you to say, and I really believe that that's a real part of what I do. And I need to be not only a good caregiver, but I believe patients these days, compared to the 1950s, Roland, deserve to know what is going on with them, with their medical conditions. So instead of saying, just trust me, I think that they need to know what we have observed, what we have planned, where we plan to go with this. So that's the part of the education you're discussing, and that is an intentional part of what I do.
That is so nice. And where do you live in the Bay Area?
I'm very near Palo Alto, which is near the Stanford University campus.
Okay, so you are close to one of the spots. I figured, knowing you, you'd probably live in Marin.
I live in Michigan, and I transfer here every day. The good news is I'm close to one of the campuses of the various places I go, and so that, I think, is maybe an 8-minute drive to get to Stanford University. But the rest do require a bit of planning and getting up early.
I bet it is. And those ladies at the, you know, at the reception area and helping out there, they think the world stops and goes with you. You got some
very kind. Yep. Very kind that they trust me and that they trust you for your care.
Yes, they are nice. They're nice people too. You have more of a family thing going there, for at least for Terry and I. Is it similar with the other patients?
We saw about 50 patients today in the office. And I must admit to the audience that we started this interview a little bit late just because I was delayed and had a long day. About 50 patients or so. And for each of them, Roland, it's a very important thing that I recognize each one as an individual, not a number, and that those patients can receive personal direct care from me specifically. So, yes, this is a matter of almost being an extended family.
Yes, it is. I one of the fellas came in, and he was bringing some goodies in that his wife cooked, and for the receptionist, because everyone else got some and she didn't, and he says, "Well, I got to get some for her." So, it's just wonderful. Now, do you do actual practice with the people at Stanford and over at the VA?
Absolutely. I teach at both of those centers, but by teaching, that means I have to see patients. So
right.
I'm there and doing direct patient care at both sites all day long, and that's a necessary part of our work there.
How many do you handle a day there? Same amount, 50, 40?
No, we at the VA, we may see 80 patients per day.
You're kidding me. 80 patients. What do they have them? Just sort of, they have them on a conveyor belt?
It seems that way. Yeah, we just we look at them as they go by and identify and throw a prescription at them. Of course, I'm joking. But the issue is we have resident doctors there from University of California, San Francisco, UCSF. And they, those resident doctors will see patients pretty much one right after the other and ask me for my input. So that allows us to see more patients, but it also gives the resident doctors more training in each area of skin conditions.
So they're taking it's actually their patient that you look over their shoulder with and comment on.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you don't, all you have to do is just sort of be the knowledge god, right?
I like that. Hey, I should adopt that new title. Maybe I could put that on my door. The knowledge god.
You get your own office? You get your own office these places, or?
No. Well, actually, there's a small room at the VA. We all understand that the Veterans Affairs hospitals are part of our government's respectful treatment of our veterans, and that's very, very important. But as part of that, of course, we do not have very lavish surroundings, and so we'll have a small cubicle, sit in and do our charting, sit on the computer and chart what we've seen on that patient, and then the resident doctors will come see me and say, "Here's Roland or whomever." And
I could be there, you know. I am a veteran and go to a VA hospital in Fargo.
I'm aware of that. So when I was watching that Coen Brothers movie called Fargo,
you know, they're going to do a series on that now.
Are they really?
Yes.
Are you going to be one of the stars?
No, I'm not. I, 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 It's funny. Today, Terry, she said some Fargo comment, a word. And she says, I'm not even to Fargo yet. I'm already starting. She picks up the accent wherever she goes to.
I think it's contagious. Oh, dear.
So, are these patients coming in sort of like this, the rooms that we're in, you know, at your office? Are they the VA office like that, or are they? I've never been to the VA place there. I've been to the one in Fargo, and they have sort of, you know, herd spots where they stop. They got a lot of veterans in there too.
Oh, no question. And those centers are located all around the country, of course. Fargo is one of the centers in the northern Midwest that treats our veterans. And yes, these are folks who may or may not have any other access to medical care. So, while you and I are joking about helicopters and everything else, these folks deserve the very best care that we can give them, and they get quality care from us. And we believe that we're giving wonderful care to them.
That is just phenomenal. And what type of patients do you see at Stanford?
These tend to be also a cross-section of people who may have medical insurance or maybe a little bit of medical insurance. These may be also the spouses, the husbands and wives who are able to come in for medical care during the day to be evaluated for skin cancer, inflammatory diseases like psoriasis, and other things, and they are pretty much locals around Palo Alto, Atherton, okay. Woodside, etc.
Okay.
But this also gives us a chance to teach the resident doctors that side of medicine as well.
Okay. Well, that is just wonderful. And do you have any concluding remarks on this wonderful speech? And don't talk to him about the alien, you know, implant that I had, that we found that thing we couldn't really identify. Don't talk about that. We won't talk about that.
What I was trying to do was clean up your act a little bit and not tell me that you had visited Area 51.
That's right.
So please, if anyone's listening to this, Roland has nothing to do with the Air Force findings of the people of the mannequins that were found in Area 51. Seriously, we like to cut up and play a little bit. It keeps the tension low with 50 to 60 patients per day. But on a serious note, we find our calling in medicine a very serious one, and it's important that people know that we've devoted our lives to giving good medical care, to learning about the latest findings in medicine so that our patients can receive appropriate evaluations, they get the correct diagnoses, and then that the treatments that they are receiving come from a compassionate, caring approach to deliver care. I mean, when I'm a patient, I want to know that my doctor is listening to me, that he or she is tuned into what I'm saying, and then from there will actually give me some type of expert advice so that I can be healthy again. So this is what we do. This is what we do every day. And yes, it's tiring and exhausting to do that, but this is why we are called to do this, and we'll keep doing it. And I appreciate your, Roland and Terry's, trust of us and all of our patients. We'll plan to keep doing this for a long time.
You're awesome. And a wonderful friend. Thank you. Thank you so much, David. And we'll hear it again on Monday at the radio show. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you for the chance, and best wishes to you too as well. I'll see you again soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, Jeff, that was David Gorsolowski, Dr. David Gorsolowski, and he has been a physician and a friend.
I like his attitude about doctors are about people. Because that's right on the hitting the nail right on the head.
Cool. Yeah, I remember going in and waiting when I was sure I had an alien implant. But that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about that when we have time because it's a long story. I've been, with different physicians. When you get in the military, there's always a different position. You always have a different position continuously. When we were in a squadron, they would go to different ships and you'd go ashore and there'd be different positions always. But one of the things in the military that's a little different is your medical records always went with you. So they would look at look at your records and they would know pretty much what was happening to you on the run. And surprising, you got really good care. We got good care aboard ships. We got good care when we were ashore. The military gives you very good health care. And the physicians are fortunate and they recruit them because what they do is they give them a commission. In other words, they give them about a week training, maybe a half, week and a half. I'm joking, maybe a little more. And teach them how to put their uniform on right and then throw bars on their shoulder and say, you are an officer and a gentleman now. Show us how you are one. And normally they spend most of their time just taking care of, patients. And some of them were, fatigues. Most people are, khaki because a khaki uniform I'm talking about Navy now, so the Navy man. It was comfortable. It's a comfortable uniform wearing over it. They wear their white smock. Is that what they call it?
Mm-hmm.
There weren't many that pushed around their rank. Every once in a while, I'd see one that had to do it because someone got ornery with them. Most of them were really, really good guys, and they cared about their patients, and they cared about our country. Wonderful people.
Interesting to know that being a doctor in the military isn't military plus doctor training on top of it in your copious spare time, but rather doctors who have been called into service. And I would guess that giving these people a rank is what's designed to have people respect them and probably follow orders when someone says, okay, bend over and sit still and take off your shirt. And don't worry, this is only going to hurt a little bit when you get shot by me.
You sure have a shot problem, don't you? Somewhere along the line, it became just okay for me. I don't know when. I think it bothered me when I was young, but somewhere along the line, I think it's when I went in the military and started going to a lot of overseas places. And they gave you so many shots that it became boring. It's like, oh, another group of shots. Where are we going this time? Well, we're going over to African country. We're going over some other country, or they have this other disease that's around here and we got to get cover it. Well, how many shots are you getting? Three. Okay. So you'd walk in and hope there was a pretty nurse, which there never was. And then you'd get your shots. Nowadays, after I left, they started having women go aboard ships. And then they might even have a pretty nurse. Oh, well, that's another story, Jeff. Your turn.
Actually, we are pretty much out of time here, so we're going to give you the clean bill of health for telling more stories in the future. And we're going to say that if you haven't visited your doctor in a while, you might want to go and get your physical checkup because you never know what's wrong with you. Hopefully everything's all right, and you'll be all right to visit us again next time for more Old Men Stories. Jeff Young signing out.
Not all emergencies require a hospital visit. The common cold, the aches and pains, and the occasionally broken bone, and those pesky shots. Those are the purview of your family doctor. and the personal vendor of wellness can be found in offices just around the corner. Why is visiting the doctor not as bad as going to the hospital, in your head and in your past? We'd like to know. Jeff Young,
Roland Willits,
Old Men Stories.
You've been listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. The story for the day may end here, but the adventure continues. Join us next time for another round of stories around the virtual campfire. Roland and Jeff want to hear what stories you have to share, too. Join the circle over at www.oldmenstories.org or send Roland and Jeff an email at oldmenstories@wq4d.net. That's oldmenstories@wq4d.net. And remember that you are already a master storyteller in your own right. We want to hear your story.